The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt back inside the Beltway. When the cherry blossoms come out, I migrate. I migrate from West Coast to East Coast. I'm back inside the Beltway for a grand total of about 48 hours, and already I'm sick of it. But it is what it is. They always cover what I like to cover, but they just never stop covering it. Let me begin this morning with breaking news. The Israeli Defense Forces are in the Shifa Hospital complex battling Hamas, which returned to the complex after being driven out. More than 80 arrests have been made. They are using appropriate force. They have given warnings to the residents to get out of there. They're making sure that the doctors and patients are protected and medical equipment, but they are not going to allow Hamas to use hospitals as cover. And they forgot that. So Hamas is going to lose another one today. This just in, Putin has won yet another election. He's going to be like Franco. He's going to be there forever. Get used to it. He's a dictator. He's a barbarian. And it wasn't a fair election, but he's there. It's the way the world is. He's not going anywhere. Let's get to Benjamin Netanyahu, because, you know, Chuck Schumer last week did the most ridiculous thing I've seen in a long time, making a speech on the floor of the Senate condemning the Israeli government and Benjamin Netanyahu. It's just without precedent, actually. And Netanyahu wasn't going to take that lying down, right? He just wasn't going to do that. So he opened his cabinet meeting by saying, "So let's be clear, if we stop the war now before all of its goals are achieved," Netanyahu said, "it means that Israel has lost the war, and we will not allow that. That is why we must not give in to these pressures, and we will not give in to them." Good for you, Prime Minister Netanyahu. It is a war cabinet. It is a unity government. They are 90% of Israel is in favor of going to Rafah and finishing off Hamas. There isn't any controversy about this. It is simply made up by Chuck Schumer, who will, like Harry Reid before him, when Harry Reid said Mitt Romney didn't pay any taxes, Chuck Schumer will say whatever he thinks helps the Democratic Party. And once you understand that, you'll understand how to speak Schumer. But Netanyahu went on Dana Bash on CNN yesterday and had his turn, cut number 25.
There's a fallacy that is being perpetrated here. And you should take polls. You'll have your own polls and check whether the people of Israel support the policies that I'm being criticized for. That is, supporting the policies of going into Rafah, destroying a quarter of the remaining Hamas terrorist army. That's like leaving a quarter of the Hamas, of the Nazi terrorist army in Germany and saying, no, we're not going to finish the last quarter, and we're not going into Berlin. Most Israelis overwhelmingly support the position that we have to go in. They oppose the idea of ramming down a two-state solution or a terrorist state against their will, because they think that this is will endanger Israel's future. They support those policies that I'm putting forward, and to present that as something that is, I'm an outlier, it doesn't represent the majority of the people of Israel, is simply a fallacy. And I'll tell you the other fallacy is, they're saying, well, most Palestinians don't support the Hamas massacre. In fact, 85% of the Palestinians do support, unfortunately, the Hamas massacre. So they've got two fallacies here. And you can readily check that. The majority of Israelis support the policies that I have on prosecuting the war, which is what I'm being criticized for.
Well,
so it's not just me. I think the people of Israel who believe that we have to have this resolute victory to assure a future.
I think
and
that what you're being criticized for is not prosecuting the war. It's the way that you're prosecuting the war.
That's simply not true. That's not what Chuck Schumer said, Dana. What Chuck Schumer said is that Israel can't go into Rafah and Netanyahu is an obstacle to peace. He isn't being criticized for the way he's conducting the war. He's being criticized for conducting the war. Netanyahu was not having any of this stuff with Schumer. Cut number 26.
I think what he said is totally inappropriate. It's inappropriate for to go to a sister democracy and try to replace the elected leadership there. That's something that Israel, the Israeli public, does on its own. And we're not a banana republic. I think the only government that we should be working on to bring down now is the terrorist tyranny in Gaza, the Hamas tyranny that murdered over 1,000 Israelis, including some dozens of Americans, and is holding Americans and Israelis hostage. That's what we should be focused on. And as far as what Senator Schumer said, the majority of Israelis support our governments. 82% of Americans support Israel instead of Hamas. But the majority of Israelis support the policies that we're leading. Go into Rafah, destroy the remaining Hamas terrorist battalions. Make sure that we don't put into Gaza, instead of Hamas, the Palestinian Authority that educates their children towards terrorism and the annihilation of Israel. And also an enormous majority here, including 99 Knesset members to 9, oppose the idea of ramming down a Palestinian state down our throats.
I want to get to some
the majority
of those polls.
Of Israelis, this is a wake-up call to Senator Schumer. The majority of Israelis support the policies of my government. Okay. It's not a fringe government. It represents the policies supported by the majority of the people. If Senator Schumer opposes these policies, he's not opposing me. He's opposing the people of Israel.
Well said, Netanyahu. Well said, Prime Minister. One more cut from this, cut number 27.
Well, time will tell, but Hamas's outlandish demands, and I'm not itemizing every one of them now, makes that deal a lot more difficult. But we're going to keep on trying because we want those hostages back. We understand also that the one thing that gets Hamas to give them is to give these hostages to us is the continued military pressure that we're applying there. So we're going to continue military pressure, and we're going to continue to try to get those hostages out. And we've succeeded already in bringing half of them out. I hope we continue along that same course.
Of course, most of you know Mossad is the Israeli international intelligence operation operating outside of Israel, Shin Bet inside. The head of Mossad went to Qatar yesterday. Talks will resume today. But given the outline leaks, I think we're weeks away from a deal. In the meantime, they're going to go into Rafah. I got a chance on Friday night special report to talk about Senator Schumer's ridiculous comments. Brett asked me about them. Cut number 3.
We're back with the panel. It created a lot of waves. Hugh, you mentioned it. The fallout is still really continuing.
And it should continue for a long time. It's embarrassing. It's unprecedented. And it is, I think, quite obviously a political stunt by Chuck Schumer to try and divert attention from Joe Biden's crumbling numbers. The president said it was a good speech. It was not a good speech. So bad a speech, in fact, that every major Jewish American organization in the United States has condemned it. And Benny Gantz, who is in the war cabinet and part of the government, also condemned it. We do not call on our allies, our democratically elected allies, to change regimes because we don't like their leaders. Schumer should apologize, and I'll speak back to him later when we talk about winners and losers of the week.
I did go back to winners and the losers of the week. I do want you to know the numbers that I referred to. Quote from NBC News, Biden's 38% approval rating at this stage in the calendar is lower than that of the last three presidents who went on to lose re-election. Trump, who was at 48%, that's pre-COVID. George H.W. Bush, who was at 39% in 1992. And Jimmy Carter, who was 43% in 1980, according to Gallup survey data. Joe Biden is doomed. And you may not know that. Legacy media doesn't want you to know that. They're going to do everything they can to hide it. But I did go back and talk about Chuck Schumer at the end of Special Report. Let's play that.
My winners are a group of podcasts, Brett, that have grown exponentially in popularity. They are the Commentary Podcast, in which our friend Matt is a frequent participant. Dan Senor's Call Me Back and Then Getting Hammered with Mary Catherine Hamm and Vic Mattison. The reason that they are soaring is that they go deep and they are funny and they are still focused, even as the rest of the media moves on from the war in Israel. Too often, they're too quick to go away from Gaza. These three podcasts in particular are focused on it. The loser is Chuck Schumer. I think he might be the loser of the month and the year. That was really a very bad choice yesterday.
He did make a very bad choice. By the way, I made a mistake, and I want to correct it on Special Report. We were talking about Fannie Willis. Cut number 1.
Hugh, this came as a surprise to many who watched this trial unfold live on cable television. But what do you make of the fallout from this decision? Fannie Willis stays in the position. She still moves forward with the case. Nathan Wade resigned today.
Well, Brett, I can't read the judge's mind, but I have read his opinion. It does not make a lot of sense. He admits that an odor of mendacity surrounds the case still. And if I were Governor Brian Kemp, I would be concerned about the appearance of justice in Georgia, and I would offer the district attorney a choice. Either she gives the case to the state attorney general to prosecute, or he will pardon everyone in this case. Because it's a bad rush job. I cannot believe the judge came to this conclusion. And I think Andy McCarthy, who we saw on tape, is right once again. It was a very big win for Donald Trump.
But I was wrong, because the governor of Georgia is one of nine governors who does not have the pardon power. It resides in the board. Now, I want to talk to you about Alliance Defending Freedom. People get fired all the time for speaking their minds. People get disciplined all the time. They get criticized for speaking their mind. That's when ADF steps up to defend them. Lindsay Barr is one such person, teacher, longtime teacher in the Georgia school system. Give a listen to Lindsay.
My name is Lindsay Barr. I'm a Christian, a wife, and a mother of three. I went to the principal, and I was fired for raising my concerns. I lost my job in the school district where I had worked for over 10 years as a teacher. That's wrong, and that's why I reached out to Alliance Defending Freedom for help. What's happening to me isn't right, and I'm standing up because I don't want it to happen to anyone else.
She was going to the principal about books she considered inappropriate and available to her classroom. So she raised a standard concern. I don't think this should be in the hands of kindergartners, first graders, second graders, whatever it is. If you want to help Alliance Defending Freedom continue to battle on behalf of free speech and the rights of conscience, head over to HughHewitt.com and click the banner at the top there, or call 855-374-4123. Good morning, America. Hugh Hewitt. If you're an early riser, I'm glad that you were with me. I'm back inside the Beltway on this Monday. A lot of political headlines. President Biden has a $53 million February haul. So $53 million were contributed to them. They have $155 million cash on hand. And that's a substantial lead over former President Trump. On the other hand, they can't put Joe Biden outside. In fact, the great story of the morning comes from Fox News. President Biden's mysterious new shoes provide maximum stability. I don't know if you've seen these new shoes. They are clodhoppers, all right. They're designed for maximum comfort and support while walking and hiking. Biden's specific shoe is called the Hoka Transport. It has a wide sole, no doubt great for stability. Meanwhile, the Washington Post reported, NBC News, I'm sorry, reported yesterday, behind the scenes, Biden has grown angry and anxious about his reelection effort. Old grumpy old man is mad. And the New York Times helped out yesterday with the story, how Trump's allies are winning the war over disinformation. Now, that goes to my favorite story of the weekend, the bloodbath story. You may have heard a tiny little clip of Donald Trump's speech in Ohio over the weekend. The tiny little clip that you probably heard is this one, cut number five.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath.
All right. So bloodbath, the media seized on it. And they said Donald Trump was threatening a bloodbath. Let me play for you the full context of the bloodbath comment, cut number six.
Mexico has taken over a period of 30 years. 34% of the automobile manufacturing business in our country, think of it, went to Mexico. China now is building a couple of massive plants where they're going to build the cars in Mexico and think that they're going to sell those cars into the United States with no tax at the border. Let me tell you something to China. If you're listening, President Xi, and you and I are friends, but he understands the way I deal, those big monster car manufacturing plants that you're building in Mexico right now, and you think you're going to get that, you're going to not hire Americans, and you're going to sell the cars to us. Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories. A friend of mine,
All right, so you get it? That's going to be least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. Do you get it? He's talking about the automobile industry, domestic manufacturing. That's obvious. It is so obvious that you have to be either stupid or malign to misreport it. So what do Biden and Harris put out on their official campaign site? Biden-Harris campaign statement on Trump promising bloodbath if he loses. That is just so Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They got nothing. But it also spread everywhere. I mean, it spread everywhere. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I do not want you to think that the word bloodbath is now verboten. It was a bloodbath in here over the weekend as I repaired. Dwayne came here to work on the studio during the winter. So there's a bloodbath in here over the weekend because I had a paper cut fixing the stuff that Dwayne did wrong. The Indians, now Guardians, may have a bloodbath ahead of them because Stevens went on the IR. I think we're going to have Carlos Carrasco as our fourth starter. It could be a bloodbath in the American League Central Division.
I got a few.
You got a few bloodbaths? What bloodbaths have you been involved in?
I got a few. Super Tuesday was a bloodbath for Nikki Haley.
It was a bloodbath for Nikki Haley. She did win Vermont.
She did win Vermont, but the rest of the day, the bullet train in California has been an economic bloodbath.
That's an absolute bloodbath.
You can say that it's been a bloodbath for Game Warden trucks and CJ Box books.
Yes, absolutely. Do not want to be a Game Warden truck in a CJ Box Joe Pickett novel.
You could say the Marvels took a bloodbath at the box office.
Oh, boy, did they ever. Oh, boy, did they ever. They have just Webmaster. Was that the one that totally bloodbath at the box office?
No, Madam Web.
Madam Web, that was it.
You
that
could say Madam Web. It was a bloodbath at the,
it was a
at
bloodbath.
The box office.
Disney's most recent animated film was a bloodbath.
Yes, you could say going to the grocery store in the Biden era is a bloodbath.
That's another bloodbath. In fact, Grabian did a handy montage for us of regime media not having a problem using the term bloodbath until Donald Trump does. Cut number 21.
But as Politico.com reports tonight on the, quote, bloodbath at the RNC.
Headlines calling it a, quote, bloodbath.
A bloodbath. Not only is it going to be a bloodbath, but after they leave New Hampshire, it's a bloodbath on her home turf. That's really tough.
Trump has left a lot of corpses in his wake. I mean, we can count the bodies
as part of the, quote, MAGA drive to take over Maricopa County. And the headline refers to it as an impending bloodbath.
Columnist Charles Blow has a new piece for the New York Times entitled A Biden Bloodbath.
2018 midterms, you can bet that they 100% are fearing a slaughter. In fact, the word bloodbath. Bloodbath and massacre come up frequently.
The Republican Party will be destroyed. It's going to be a bloodbath.
There's going to be a bloodbath one way or the other.
Bloodbath for Bernie Sanders.
It's been a bloodbath. They're shaping up to be a bloodbath.
Head off a bloodbath in next year's crucial midterm.
Off-year elections are often a bloodbath.
This week's bloodbath for Democrats.
A bloodbath at the ballot box.
There could be a Republican bloodbath.
They'll talk about a bloodbath.
It's a bloodbath. I have to talk about you.
It's going to be a bloodbath all day long.
Is in for a bloodbath. Bath.
Hasn't been a bloodbath on the way down.
Donald Trump bloodbath.
Be a bloodbath.
Predicted to be a bloodbath.
May not be the bloodbath.
It would be a bloodbath.
More of a bloodbath.
It's going to be a bloodbath in November.
Possible Biden bloodbath this November.
A bloodbath on Wall Street.
There's going to be a bloodbath
in Alabama into a bloodbath.
Obviously, there was a bloodbath.
It was a bloodbath. We're down 800 points.
This bloodbath at Department of Homeland Security.
And it's a bloodbath today.
There was going to be this bloodbath.
Election bloodbath.
It could be a bloodbath for them.
Bloodbath, possibly.
Bloodbath that went through with the Attorney General.
Bloodbath 99 days out.
The bloodbath is going to look like
presided over a bloodbath in the diplomatic corps.
All right, it goes on and on and on. Because bloodbath is a term that is used commonly to describe a horrific event. I want to talk about Dwayne's bloodbath when it came to myphdweightloss.com, a great sponsor of our show. Dwayne suffered a bloodbath. I mean, he's now mini Dwayne. He's skinny Dwayne. He used to be generously proportioned Dwayne. And then there was a bloodbath in your dieting habits, right?
Yes, there was a caloric bloodbath.
A caloric bloodbath.
Yes.
You did a caloric. Actually, you just changed. You kept up the same number of calories, but you got rid of the bad one.
For fewer calories, more protein. It was a carb bloodbath.
Thank you. A carb bloodbath. MyPhDweightLoss.com, 864-644-1900. That's
864
844-1900. So you had a carb bloodbath, and did anyone ever say, don't use that term with me because you're offending me?
It's such a stupid controversy.
Well, it's stupid on the left, along with the fact that the New York Times runs a big story over the weekend that says Trump is winning the disinformation war. Yeah, it's just so funny.
Everything 2024 is 2016 all over again. They helped try to pick the nominee for the Republicans. They did their part, and now that they've got the nominee that they thought they wanted, now that he's winning in all the swing state polls and ahead in a head-to-head matchup, now they're getting panicky.
And it's going to be a bloodbath at some of these networks afterwards, because when Trump wins again, I think he's going to win, because Joe Biden can't walk. There was a terrible video this weekend, and I'm not spending a lot of time on this.
They're like snowshoe loafers.
Well, yeah, but the president was in the rain, and they were trying to get him out of the rain.
They walked him into a door.
They walked him into a door because he doesn't do doors very well. And so it was a bloodbath in bad press. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt back inside the Beltway, unfortunately, but that's where I have to work. I'm back for the cherry blossoms. And I'm joined by the great senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance. Good morning, Senator. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Election day tomorrow in Ohio.
Yeah, that's right, Hugh. Thanks for having me. And, of course, I've endorsed Bernie Marino. We were rallying with Donald Trump and Bernie on Saturday for tomorrow's election. And I think we got a lot of good energy. So we're just barnstorming across the state today and trying to get as many people out to vote as possible.
Are you going to Warren, J.D.? Because if you don't go to Warren, it's not really barnstorming.
We are not going to Warren on this trip. No hot dog shoppy.
Senator, tell Bernie he's got to get over there. Let's talk a little bit about that rally on Saturday. I played a lot of the audio in my podcast because the media treated it like Donald Trump called for a bloodbath of his opponents. And I mean, aren't you sick of this at this point?
Yeah, I'm sick of it, Hugh. It's also just, you know, instead of talking about trade policy or foreign policy or any of the issues that actually most Americans care about, we need to be discussing in the context of a political debate. We have another hysterical, paranoid media cycle. And I actually just think, Hugh, the voters don't care about this stuff in 2024. They see the media getting hysterical about something Donald Trump says. I think most people, even a lot of people who aren't going to vote for Donald Trump, just sort of dismiss it. So I think this stuff really does backfire. If you look at what Trump said, he was saying there's going to be a bloodbath in the auto industry if he loses. I happen to agree with him, Hugh. But whether you agree or disagree, at least be honest and report what the guy actually said.
I couldn't agree more. And I also agree that the fanaticism with which the attacks are coming against the former president is going to help him, Senator Vance. And I know you follow the polls. Joe Biden is down at 38%. It's pretty hard to get to 38%. I mean, you got to work at it. And he kept it up with the State of the Union. Were you in there, by the way? Did he yell at you for an hour and a half? Were you in there?
No, I was not. You. I skipped that. I decided it was going to be a hyper-political speech, and I took the Antonin Scalia approach and just said, you know what? I've got better things to do. So I did not go, and I was based on the speech, I was right to be there, not be there. Look, the crazy thing, Hugh, is the Democrats are starting to panic about his poll numbers. And you may have seen this story come out yesterday where Biden himself is starting to get irritated and angry because they just won't budge. They won't budge because people are actually frustrated about the state of the country. Larry Summers, who is a former Obama administration economist, not a Republican by any means, he actually sort of came out with this very interesting study, or at least he was posting about it yesterday, that basically walks through the ways in which current inflation measures are undervaluing increases in mortgage payments, increases in car payments that are really hitting Americans where they hurt. So people aren't happy with the economy. They're not going to be brought to Joe Biden by hysterically misrepresenting what Donald Trump said.
Now, the other thing that I'm worried about is that they're going to force the Fed, they being the White House, are going to jawbone the Fed into lowering interest rates too early. And I'm not a fan of interest rates that are artificially high. But the money supply drives inflation, J.D. Vance. You know that. I'm sure they taught that at Yale Law School, right? They taught it at The Ohio State University. I'm sure they taught it in the Marine Corps. But too much money means inflation. And Joe Biden just spent all the money. And now we've got this hanging over us. And there's no way to get rid of it until you reduce the money supply.
Yeah, you don't want the Fed to become politicized. I have the same fear you do, Hugh. If you look at the inflation numbers that came out just last week, inflation just is persistently high. And economists keep on telling us that it's going to dip back around that 2% threshold. And it's just stubbornly high because I think the economy is just still not in a place where you can bring down that inflation number. So if the Fed, I think, artificially lowered interest rates, what it would do is maybe make the inflation problem worse. Now, Biden is, of course, wanting them to do that because he thinks it'll help them politically. I'm not sure if the Fed throws more fuel on the fire of inflation, whether it will actually help Joe Biden politically. I don't know that anything will help him. People just remember, you know, the mainstream media, you know this, they call it Trump amnesia. The argument is that people forget how bad things were in the Trump administration. I remember how good things were in the Trump administration. I remember the fact that we didn't have wars in multiple places in the world. I remember that we had low inflation and rapidly rising wages, especially for folks on the bottom. Like, things were pretty good when Donald Trump was president. People remember that. And I think they're going to reward him with a victory in November because of it.
You know, J.D., I'm well off. I'm a one percenter. But I went to the market yesterday because the fetching Mrs. Hewitt is staying by in California for another week. So I had to get milk and bagel. I mean, like nothing. But I walked up to the Safeway. $60 for like nothing. And I thought, how in the world are Americans making it? Do you hear this all the time, whether it's at a Bernie rally or wherever you're out on the street?
No, we hear this all the time. It's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about Bernie Burrito is because he's an outsider and he's going to bring a fresh perspective to Washington. And he understands how the economy works. And yeah, if you go to the grocery store, if you talk to people who are you know, shopping, a lot of moms and dads who are worried about prices. But it's not just at the grocery store, Hugh. I mean, you know, car payments, cars are way more expensive than they were even 5 years ago. Home payments are absolutely through the roof. You know, I have a young guy on my staff who's a young family looking to start fresh, buying a house. And it is crazy to me what these guys are paying for starter homes as young Americans. If you can't expect young Americans to be able to afford a home, people are going to be happy with the economy. They're not.
Yeah, you know, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I bought our first home in 1985, and the mortgage rate on that was 12.5%, but the home cost $80,000. That's not the case anymore. And it's just impossible. Jay, let me talk to you about Ukraine while I've got you.
Sure.
You and I disagree about Ukraine. I agree with Senator Cotton. Send only weapons. Just plus up the defense budget and send weapons. That's not what Joe Biden is asking for. I don't want to send any aid for their bureaucrats. I don't want to pay for their pension. I just want to send weapons. What do you say about the Cotton proposal?
Well, look, I like Tom, obviously respect him a ton. And he's one of the smartest people in Washington in any party or any chamber. But we do disagree on this. My basic argument to you is we don't have enough weapons to send. And I think we have to get really serious and acknowledge our own limitations. The reports are coming out of Israel. And, of course, we were seeing this in classified context months ago that they are running low on ammunition. The Ukrainians are obviously running low on ammunition. The Taiwanese are not getting the things that we need to send them so that they can deter a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. God forbid if the Chinese make that move. We cannot support all of these theaters simultaneously with the industrial base in the condition that it's in. So I think you and I agree we should rebuild that industrial base. But while we're in the position that we are, we have to pick and choose. I just don't think Ukraine meets the threshold of America's core interests right now, especially when you compare it to what's going on in East Asia and in the Middle East.
Do you think Putin will stop in Ukraine if he succeeds in breaking through those lines, or will he go into the Baltics and Poland? And if the latter is true, don't we have to send troops?
Well, I do not think that he'll go into Poland, Hugh. I don't think that he has the capacity to do it if he wants to. I won't pretend to know Vladimir Putin's motivations, but I think his capacity for war is relatively limited. I don't think, for what it's worth, Hugh, that he can go in even into the, I guess, the western part of Ukraine. They don't have the manpower to govern a territory that large and that resistant. What I think is going to eventually happen is that Ukraine will probably lose 20% of their 1991 territory. That's not a good thing, by the way, Hugh. I'm not condoning the invasion, but I think this is the real world of limitations that we're living in, and we have to accept it.
Well, I think the Reagan doctor, I'm a student of the Reagan administration. Help your friends. Ukraine is a friend. They're not a treaty ally. And kill as many Russians as they send over the line. It's World War I now. It's just going to be a war of attrition. The Russians probably can win that without the artillery shells. But we agree on rebuilding the industrial base. Let me ask you about the president's defense budget, a 0.9% increase. J.D., that is so far below inflation that I can't imagine any senator supporting that.
No, it's way too low, Hugh. And also, I mean, we have to really get into the weeds about how we procure weapons and equipment in the United States military. I think that we have to do a lot better there. You know, the Chinese are building ships for about a quarter of the cost that it takes an American to build a ship. And some of that is labor, Hugh, but most of that is actually not labor. Most of that is just that we have broken supply chains, and we have to fix this stuff if we're going to stay ahead of our competitors for the next century. So yeah, it's not enough money, and there's not enough real evaluation of how to make the procurement process better so that we can really win the next century. I really worry about this, Hugh, that the Chinese have very smartly invested, you know, not just in manufacturing capacity, but in minerals and relationships all over the world. They've developed the logistics networks, the supply chains. We really have been outplayed by them for decades now. And I think
We just got thrown out of Niger, J.D. Vance. And that's because the Chinese are there.
The Chinese are there. And of course, Joe Biden is president. And why is the president playing a positive role here? It's another reason why I think we need Donald Trump back.
I agree with you, Senator Vance. Thank you. Enjoy your day. But try and get Bernie to go to Warren. Used to be that the Democrats always finished up at Trumbull County Courthouse in the heart of Warren. You just got to go there if you want to win. Stay tuned, America. That was Senator Vance. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
If tears began to rise.
Welcome back, America. That is the theme song to Look Through the Chaos podcast, the co-host of which is none other than John Campbell, who joins me now. The Look Through the Chaos podcast taking off like a rocket. I don't know why the sound quality that you've got is terrible. Have you improved your microphone yet, Congressman?
Not yet, but I will have it improved by Monday. My technology I have is rather old. I think this computer is 2015 or 2014, and these things I have in my ears to speak to you on predate that, probably by 10 years or so.
You might want to do an upgrade, just a little upgrade.
I might. I just hate spending money with these leftist technology companies. I like their products. I just hate the companies. But I have a bone to pick with you right now.
Me? No.
You were on Bret Baier Friday night, were you not?
I was.
Yes. And the captain, Mrs. Campbell, and I sat down, and it was recorded, and we sat down at our dinner table and watched it. And when you got to the winners and losers of the week, you picked winners as podcasters. And we looked at each other and we said, oh, this is going to be great. He will bring up Look Through the Chaos podcast. But as we listened,
imagine the bump we're going to get from that.
Yeah, we thought it'd be great. So we listened and I was waiting for Look Through the Chaos, but instead I heard.
What you heard was Call Me Back, commentary and getting hammered because they cover the Israeli massacre. You guys are more domestic politics. I didn't name you, but I did name those three. So, you know, that is, I'm not going to forward promote what you got to succeed first.
We went from zero to thousands in 10 days. Okay. And so we are succeeding. And you did not say that the winners of the week are podcasters who discuss Israel or exclusively Israel.
Yes,
you
I
just
did.
Said
no, you didn't.
So no, let's go back. Okay. This is like a Geico commercial. Let's go to the tape. Let's play cut number four, please. Cut number four.
Okay. Winners and losers. Hugh first.
My winners are a group of podcasts, Brett, that have grown exponentially in popularity. They are the commentary podcast in which our friend Matt is a frequent participant. Dan Senor's Call Me Back and then Getting Hammered with Mary Catherine Hammond, Vic Mattis. The reason that they are soaring is that they go deep and they are funny and they are still focused, even as the rest of the media moves on from the war in Israel. Too often, they're too quick to go away from Gaza. These three podcasts in particular.
Thank you. So, John Campbell, do you want to apologize now for your disinformation? You're part of the fake media.
No, because when you go from one to thousands, that is also exponential. So maybe it's not the same numbers that they have yet, but we'll get there.
We'll start talking about Israel, and I'll put you in my winner of the week. Let me ask you about something more important, though.
Okay. Well,
there's a story today about interest rates. And Lawrence Summer said, and this got repeated in a new NBER paper with and a couple economists, we argue that the unprecedented increase in borrowing costs is crucial to explaining the low consumer sentiment of the last 2 years. When President Biden said consumer confidence is soaring, I said, wait a minute. He said that in the State of the Union. I went and looked, it had plummeted in February. I knew it wasn't true, but I didn't realize that they didn't even include the cost of borrowing in the consumer product inflation. Did you know that?
Yeah, I actually I tweeted out about this last week at some point that what we have right now, consumer spending is still high. It's still going well. That's the good news that Biden's talking about, et cetera, et cetera. Consumers are still spending money. They're doing that in part because they still have, some of them do, not all of them, but a lot of the money from the pandemic that was handed out, the so-called helicopter money that was handed out. Some of that is still out there. There's still some revenge travel going on. There's all that sort of consumer spending. But on the other side of it, consumer confidence is at recession levels, recessionary levels. I was actually at a conference here in Phoenix last week that Liz Ann Saunders, the chief economist for Charles Schwab, was at. And she said in this conference that the dichotomy between consumer spending and consumer confidence has never been this wide. Consumer confidence has never been this low without a recession. But you don't have a recession with consumer spending. So what's going on? So her explanation was it's inflation. It's just what you were talking about before the break. It's that people are spending right now, but they're realizing they're running out and that they're going to run out and that they go into the market and a $100 trip to the market is nothing these days. I was talking to my son actually this last week, who lives in California, where everything is more expensive for reasons we will actually explain on our podcast tomorrow. But he said his wife, and he has three kids. So he said his wife goes to Costco, okay? And he says he comes back and he says, you spent $500. What did you buy? And it's all just food. It's all just stuff. There's nothing. It's just life necessities. It's nothing. And so that's what is getting to people. And that's why, although there's right now, they're still spending. And part of that spending is inflation alone. Did you know that since Biden was sworn in 2020, the CPI is now up 19%. So that means when you consider that most of the things you buy are not tax deductible, and as you make more money, you pay taxes on it at a higher rate, that if you're not making 25% more today than you were in 2020, you've gone backwards in terms of how much spending power you have. Now, I know Generalissimo is probably making way more than 25% more than he was in 2020, but most people are not. And so
let me give you a real world example, John. The Fetching Mrs. Hewitt did not come east with me, so I had to go to the Safeway by myself, which is always an adventure.
Oh, was it? That had to be horrible.
It takes me forever. I can't find anything. So I bought a half gallon of low fat milk.
Were you able to find the carts?
No, I had a hand cart. I bought a half gallon of milk, two sleeves of bagels, two packages of oatmeal raisin cookies, and two frozen pizzas. That's basically a week's supply for me, right? $60. I fell backwards. $60 for milk, two sleeves of bagel, two small packages of oatmeal raisin cookies, and two frozen pizzas. $60. What do your children do? I mean, I don't know. My daughter's got four kids and they're all eaters. I have no idea what their food bill is.
Yeah. Well, this is the cross currents that are going on in the economy right now, that a lot of the quote unquote headline numbers, unemployment's still below 4%, gross domestic product is still growing. People are still spending money. People in general still have cash. So you have all that good news going on out there. But then there's a lot of bad news on the other side, which is this inflation, the fact that people's incomes are more and more being eaten up by inflation, and that unemployment is actually ticking up. And some of the numbers underneath the headlines are not so good. You know, if you were making $140,000 a year as a tech person and you get laid off and you get a job at Uber, that in the unemployment number, that doesn't change. You still have a job. But obviously the income that you have has changed dramatically. And so there's some things like that going on underneath the covers, if you will, of the economy right now that are somewhat worrying. And this is going to be a problem for the Fed. I heard you talking to J.D. Vance and so forth before the break about interest rates and so forth. If the economy is starting to weaken, which it is, but inflation is still stubbornly high and actually perhaps growing, which it is, that means we're headed towards, if you extrapolate those lines out there, we're headed towards stagflation, which is a weaker economy with inflation still stubbornly high. What does the Fed do in that case? If they lower interest rates, try and help the economy, they'll stoke inflation some more. If they keep interest rates up or raise them to try and keep the inflation down, they can push the economy lower. This is a place they don't want to be because it's a Hobson's choice, but it looks like where they're heading. And if you are one of the many Biden appointees on the Fed right now, who really more than anything else care about Biden being reelected so you can have woke policies in schools and you know, put Roe versus Wade back as the law of the land and do all the leftist things that the leftists want to do, put in neo-Marxist policies everywhere, then all you really care about is having the Fed do whatever it can do to help Joe Biden get reelected.
Yeah, but they can't cut rates. They can't cut rates. That'll drive everything up. Now, I got to ask you about one thing. You're a former car dealer. The cost of a car has gone through the roof and the cost of financing. What, as a car dealer, did you think was fair to charge vis-a-vis the 10-year treasury? You didn't charge the 10-year treasury when people borrowed money. You lose money that way. But what did you charge over the 10-year treasury for a car?
It's not up to the dealer. The dealer places financing, but the dealer hardly ever does the dealer hold the financing anymore. There was a time dealers used to do that. That's not the case anymore. Now you place it, you sell it to Ford Motor Credit or GMAC, or you sell it to a local bank, or you sell it to Ally Financial, which is a big car finance outfit, national finance company that is out there. So you do that with it. And so it's not up to the dealer. It's up to what those people charge. And what they charge is dependent on the credit rating, the FICO score of the customer. Now, the dealer gets a markup. That's why the dealer does this. The dealer doesn't do it for free. The dealer gets a markup, usually, not always, but usually on these finances. Now, the dealer's markup may shrink now because their primary goal is sell a car. That's
right.
We always said in the car business, nothing happens till you sell a car. You can't fix it, service it, take it back in, use, do anything with it till you sell a car. So they may have to take some lower margins there to sell the cars. And that's what I think you're going to see happening. We're already seeing it happen in the car business now, is things get expensive for consumers. And as the cash runs out, you got to cut margins to do what.
Well, you know, if there is no inventory and there is an inventory in housing and cars are getting more expensive, I don't know how we avoid the recession. And I don't think we want to avoid the recession because it's the only way to reset the economy. Last word to you.
You're right. Recessions are things that clean out the deadwood. They're like, you know, the winter that allows new growth to come in the spring. You got to clear out the deadwood. So,
and we'll be listening for Deadwood on tomorrow's Look Through the Chaos, the podcast I did not mention on Friday night on Special Report because it's not about Israel. But Look Through the Chaos has taken off, and you can get it wherever you get your podcast. Look Through the Chaos. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. That is Herb Alpert and the Lonely Bull. I do not know why Selena Zito collected empty bottles and several stacks of her father's handkerchief for iron. She was paid to do 5 cents per perfectly folded and ironed handkerchief. She needed $3.45 to buy the Lonely Bull. I wouldn't have admitted that online, Selena. I'm not sure I would have gone that way.
Well, you know, people were talking about what was the first you know, put up what was your first album that you bought. And I loved Herb Albert's music. My dad had, I don't know how I heard it, probably on the radio, on the AM radio, but that was the first album that I bought.
Yeah, mine was Meet the Beatles, but I figured no one would believe me, so I didn't post it. But I thought yours was definitely in the, oh, she really did buy Herb Alpert and the Lonely Bull. So
I did.
Good. Did you keep all your records, Selena? Mine are in the garage.
Mine are beautifully displayed in my living room. I also loved Frank Sinatra. So
you're very retro. No, I've got The Who and Who's Next and all that different stuff. I got all those albums in a box. Hopefully they aren't warped. I don't know if they can still be played. Selena, you're in Ohio. Big vote tomorrow between the three frontrunners. And I want to do it in alphabetical order. Matt Dolan is running against Frank Lucas, who is running against Matt Dolan and Bernie Marino. So it's Dolan, Lucas, and Marino. I believe Matt Dolan is ahead in the polls. The former president has endorsed Bernie Marino. Frank Lucas was endorsed by the former president in 2022. Rob Portman has endorsed Matt Dolan. What are you hearing on the ground in Ohio?
Well, it's a really tight race. That is for sure. And everyone sort of has their camps of, you know, the more establishment are supporting Dolan, and the more conservative populist are supporting Marino. And I think that with the heavy lift from Vance, and Vance is very popular among Republicans.
Yeah, JD's coming on the show in the third hour today.
Yeah, and he's going all over the state. In fact, I'm going to catch up with him in Parma today. That's where I'm heading. And Trump is extremely popular in the state. I'm going to give the edge to Marino because in a tight race like that, you have seen Trump having help lift people out of a tight race.
I don't do predictions anymore. I know that Bernie is very, very popular in Trumbull County and Mahoning Valley and Ashtabula, but Matt Dolan represents Cleveland in the Ohio State Senate, and turning out Cleveland, if you can turn out Cleveland in a Republican primary, apparently it's a pretty low turnout in the early voting, Selena, which would be advantage Dolan. And I don't know that Frank Lucas doesn't hurt Marino with every vote.
Yeah, I don't know. As I said, it's tight race. You know, I'm gonna keep an eye on what happens in the Mahoning Valley, right? What happens from Ashtabula all the way down to Columbiana County? These, to me, are the most interesting voters because they were forever and a day, as you know, Stark, Mahoning, Trumbull. These were legacy Democrat votes, right? New Deal votes. And even in 2016, Mahoning still went for Clinton. But I want to see.
But Trumbull flipped in 2016, and they both flipped in 2020.
Yeah, and so and Stark did too. Mahoning waited one more cycle. Well, it's almost there. It's a pretty big flip. It was already 24 percentage points difference between Obama and Clinton.
I'm in Warren, Youngstown area a lot, and it is really Trump country. And so if endorsements matter, that is a lift to Bernie Marino. Absolutely. Question, what do you think of the bloodbath coverage, Selena? It's just so freaking funny.
Well, it is funny. And I was living a normal life all weekend and never even knew it until I went to bed last night. So
where it was covered, it was poorly covered. And today it's catching up. Elon Musk retweeted someone who had posted the entire speech. It has now 54 million views. When the media does this to Donald Trump wins. Do you agree with me?
100% agree. I definitely agree. Because the media acts you know, in concert with each other. They echo each other. And when they repeat each other and they don't use a critical eye, the voters are like, wait, what are y'all doing?
That is 100% correct. Selena Zito, always a pleasure. Follow her on Twitter, or X as it is now known, at Zito Selena. But if you want everything that she writes, sign up for the newsletter at selenazito.com. Thank you. The Inza Report. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Bethany Mandel is my weekly guest. I don't know if she's in Israel or back. I think she took Mary Catherine Hamm, Guy Benson, and pretty much everybody I know who's under the age of 40 to Israel over the last couple of weeks. Hi, Bethany. Good morning. Are you here or are you there?
I'm here, and I jealously watched their trip right alongside you. I did not go with them.
Oh, you didn't go with them? Well, they were very productive.
I know.
I mean, we couldn't keep Mary Catherine off from the podcasting. She was out there doing the good work that needs to be done about the reality of the situation in Gaza. And I think they all went to the Nova site as well. Am I right about that, Bethany?
Yeah, they did. They did. They went to Nova. They went to Kfar Aza. They went to the north. They probably didn't sleep. She got back last night and said she was exhausted.
Oh, that's great. When you have four kids, it's always wonderful to come back and have no sleep. Bethany, tell me a little bit about whether or not you are offended by Chuck Schumer.
I mean, offended, I hate to say offended because I don't like being offended at anything, but it was so catastrophically stupid to talk as though Israel is a banana republic that the U.S. can just, you know, move chess pieces. Like, I call for new elections in the state of New York. That's what I love to do, but that's not how democracy works. But that's apparently what Chuck Schumer thinks happens in Israel.
I think I said so on Brett Baer's show Friday night, that the Schumer speech was a diversion from the mess that Joe Biden dug himself into via the Jonathan Capehart interview. And so they asked him to do something that would generate headlines. And they have evidently no idea of electoral politics in the United States. Do you know that Joe Biden got 68% of the American Jewish vote in 2020, which is the lowest percentage of any Democratic candidate ever?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right. Listen, like the American Jewish community is not always the wisest with their vote. But I think that American Jews are starting to really have a come to Jesus moment about the support of the Democratic Party for the state of Israel. And that's a realization that the evangelical community had a very long time ago. And we're just now playing catch up as American Jews.
Well, it does seem to me that a number of groups that purport to represent all or part of the Jewish American coalition have condemned Schumer, and rightly so. My question to you, Bethany, is anyone organizing a second march for Israel? Because now that it's been almost 6 months, it's going to be necessary to do it again.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not the hugest fan of the organized Jewish community. I feel like they're very good at lighting their money on fire. They're also very good at hiring people who are completely antithetical to their beliefs. I think I talked about it on your show. Barry Weiss gave a great speech at the 92nd Street Y, and she talked about how the curator at the Jewish Museum clicks like on Instagram of posts about Israel being a genocidal state and Gaza and from the river to the sea and all that stuff. So like, this is a curator at the Jewish Museum is doing this. There's a lot of not great elements within a lot of the organized Jewish community. And I think that, unfortunately, the last few months have gotten into the heads of a lot of those folks and taken away their resolve about what we're doing in Gaza and what we need to do. And I say we as like the Western world, like we as Americans, we as Jews, like those are not divorced. We need to eliminate the threat of Hamas. There was a story the other day about somebody who came over the southern border who was planning a Hezbollah style attack. Like, we have to handle the situation in Gaza, or we will be handled by the situation in Gaza here in the U.S.
This is not close. You cannot leave 4 to 6 battalions of Hamas fighters in Rafah and then withdraw and say, all good, ollie and free. The same thing will happen, Bethany. I mean, it will be 15 years in the making, but they've got to blow up the tunnels.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we have five Americans still left in Gaza, the bodies of more Americans that are left there. How many dozens of Americans died on October 7th? This was their greatest achievement, what they did on October 7th, and they'll do it again. They want to do it again.
Yeah, so I do not believe Schumer had any idea of the blowback he was going to get for this, nor do I think the Democrats have any idea of how they're now. As John Podhoretz likes to point out often on the commentary podcast, American Jewry is only 2% of the voting public. But you know what? It's a lot bigger than pro Hamas voting in the American public. No matter what one sees or hears, there isn't any comparison, Bethany. It's just overwhelming support for Israel.
Yeah, no, and it's not just support of Israel, but again, it's this realization and understanding that we have a problem with Gaza, we, the Western world, because if we don't take care of it, then, you know, we have another 9/11 here. So I think that Americans understand that this is an existential threat that isn't just a threat for Israel.
Now, it's a fraught time. I've got a Jewish friend who just described it to me as a fraught time for American Jews, but it's actually a fraught time for the West. You are exactly right. This isn't just about Israel and Hamas. It's about how the West and civilization endures in the face of barbarity reborn. Bethany Mandel, look for her at Bethany for Board of Education. Bethany, the number 4, BOE on X, because she is running quite madly for the Board of Education of Montgomery County, which would be great for Montgomery County and very bad for Bethany. But I warned her. Thank you, Bethany.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.